People seem to be obsessed with this Shakira World Cup song. Maybe it's just because it's the World Cup. I don't know. Wes, you love it, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like you do. I feel like you are. You try to find ways to make sure that you use it at some point in a show.
So Shakira was my celebrity crush growing up.
Okay, well, that's fair.
Yeah.
I won't fault you for that. Nick Ashew on The Fan and the Team. So the U.S. won their first two games, and their win over Australia on Friday marks the first time since 1930 that the American men won back-to-back World Cup matches. It's the first time that the men have won their group in 16 years. And we had Flo Balogun, who... Balogun? Have we gotten it down, Wes?
I think it's Balogun.
Balogun. See, yeah. I still can't... This is because people confuse me. I have people call in, they're like, actually, it's pronounced this way. I'm like, I'm trying
now,
here.
They're lying.
And listen, but maybe they're lying. That's how they said on the broadcast, Balogun. So we're gonna go with that. If it's different, you know, it's like Steve Buckhans years ago, Anderson Varejão versus Varejão. Like, the Brazilian pronunciation really is that, but nobody else says it that way. It is what it is. If you know what I'm talking about, you remember those days. But look, this is really the best team we've had since 1930 because you had Flo, I'll just go with Flo, scoring two goals in the first game in the first half against Paraguay. And that's the first time that anybody has scored two goals for the U.S. in a World Cup game since 1930. So I feel like we can at least safely say that this is the best American men's World Cup team in almost 100 years. Really, that's what we're looking at right now through the first two games. And there's a lot of love and a lot of hype for this. Zabe and I talked about this on Friday. I'm like, hey, they're 35-1 to win the World Cup. I'm not betting it, but there are people that like it. Then there are other former players like Landon Donovan and Tim Howard, who host a podcast called Unfiltered Soccer. Now, two legends. Tim Howard, one of the greatest goalkeepers we've ever had for U.S. soccer. Landon Donovan, I mean, just everybody knows Landon Donovan, all-time legend. Both of these guys, and they are obviously going to be asked every little thing that they can about this team. They've been a part of it, and that is their job to do it. This is what Tim Howard and Landon Donovan had to say about this U.S. team after their first two wins and their potential in the World Cup on their podcast, Unfiltered Soccer.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, last one.
Give it to me.
Daniel Walker. Do you guys think the USA can win the World Cup? Can we? Yes.
No.
Has this group proven it? That they can beat a top team? No. But I'll tell you this, Tim, and I mean this. If they play the way they're playing, they can absolutely compete against any team in this World Cup.
Yeah.
For sure. Okay. Can you do it? I've said this over and over. Can you do it four times in a row? Can you do it in a round of 16, a quarter, a semi, and a final? Mm-hmm. That is where it gets really hard. But momentum gets going. You never know. Is it likely? No, it's not likely. Mm-hmm. That's how I feel.
Who asked the question again? Sorry, JR.
Daniel Walker.
Daniel.
Good old Daniel.
Danny Dubs. The U.S. cannot unequivocally win the World Cup. The U.S. will have to play the greatest game they've ever played three times in a row. They're going to have to beat three world soccer powerhouses in a row in the round of 16. Oh, no. Yeah, sorry, four games in a row. Atlanta, you said round of 16, quarterfinals, semifinals,
yep.
Finals. It is literally impossible for the U.S. to win the World Cup. That's gonna come across crazy. People are going to say I'm whatever. That's just the reality. But we're super excited for this ride run.
I don't disagree with Tim Howard. Landon Donovan, I think, said it in a more fair way of like they have to play perfectly and can they, and if they keep playing like this. I just think Tim Howard's more realistic. And look, it's okay to believe in this team. It's okay to completely buy into everything that's going on. I am too. But I think this shows right now where there's a level of, like, we're immersed in the moment as a country. Hey, this is fun. Hey, we're good at soccer. We're jumping. A lot of people are jumping on the bandwagon. Look, myself included. We've talked about the LARPing. I admit, I don't watch internationals. I love soccer. I just don't watch it enough to sit here and tell you, like, I can break down everything that's going on with this. I'm not going to be that guy that fakes it. I'm not going to be one of these guys that helicopters in and just pretends that he's going to break down a bunch of World Cup matches for you. It's not going to happen. But I'm going to tell you what the casual fan's perspective is, what the overall perspective is around the U.S., all of that. And we are all jumping on it, rightfully so, because this team is winning. You want to support the team, and that's what makes the World Cup great. But there's not a broad perspective. There's not a big perspective. the big perspective will tell you, you got a lot of teams that are in front of this U.S. team that are just better, that have talent that has been there before, that have a balance, that have more of an understanding of what it's like to win at the World Cup level and the talent to do it consistently. And that's where the point, to me, of what Tim Howard just said there, Wes, I think makes a lot of sense. They're not better than France. They're not better than Spain. They're not better than England or Argentina. And you got Portugal, you know, if we're just looking at odds, and I know odds don't necessarily tell you anything. There's Brazil, and there's Germany. The Netherlands just put up 5 goals yesterday, okay? They're really good. Norway, like, these are very good soccer programs that we have seen in this position time and time again. Does that mean that they can't continue to play this elite level of soccer to where later on we go, oh, something really is different about this team? The coaching, everything is just different. Yes, it is possible.
I
don't have a problem, Wes. You have a problem with the way Tim Howard said it, didn't you?
I do have a problem with it because he said it is literally impossible for the U.S. to win the World Cup. I'm sorry, but what did we tell Indiana fans 9 years ago? It is impossible for you to ever win the college football playoff.
But that's ever versus right now. He's saying this year in this World Cup.
I don't understand. You have a world-class coach. This is a completely different team compared to when Tim Howard was on the team in 2014. I mean, I think that there is some personal saltiness coming from this guy.
Now, that could be. That could be true.
And Tim Howard, he holds the record for the most saves in a game ever in the World Cup. It was 16 against Belgium back in 2014. He's a living legend for this USA team. Landon Donovan, like you said it in a nicer way. Tim Howard, he's got to have some PR training. I mean, he's got to have.
But why though? Let me ask you this.
Because so he's got to. Does Ryan Zimmerman go out there and say the Nats suck? No.
But is that his job? Does he have a, like, this is, it's soccer unfiltered or unfiltered soccer. Remember, they need to be unfiltered, Wes.
I don't say impossible.
Okay, but here's the difference. Ryan Zimmerman works for the Nationals. Tim Howard and Landon Donovan were talking about this on a podcast that's supposed to be honest answers about
for the team.
Sure, he's an ambassador, but that's different than Ryan Zimmerman talking about the Nationals. Just to go by the example that you brought up there, it's a different thing. I love when a former athlete is willing to be honest, whether you agree with what they're saying or not. I would rather have that, what Tim Howard said, if that's how he feels, than sugarcoating it. I would rather have, love him or hate him, Kendrick Perkins and the way that he'll call out other NBA players versus what you see on half these other pre- and post-game shows like, you know, NBC's, where everybody's just giving you a bunch of fluff. I don't want fluff. I want to hear honest answers from athletes that have played the game. If they see it and don't think, and they're not buying into the love and excitement and jumping on the bandwagon for this, you may disagree with them. But I love the fact that Tim Howard said that. I don't agree with him. I agree more with where Landon Donovan is, where it's like there's the way he framed it, Landon Donovan framed it, was it's much more of like there's a slight chance, but it's got to be perfect soccer. And without saying it, basically said, like, there's more talent on all these other teams that are going to be above them, like the ones I mentioned in Argentina, Brazil, you know, France, Portugal, or Spain, or whoever. They have to play really bad games while the U.S. has to play perfectly all the way through to make up for the talent difference. There is a talent difference that is still between those other teams that I mentioned at the top and the U.S. team at this current time. Now, can coaching make that difference? Absolutely. Do I think that Tim Howard saying it is impossible is, you're probably using too extreme of an example because it is sports, so I get where you're saying that, Wes. But at the same time, I don't have a problem with him saying that because that's how he feels and he's being honest. And it's refreshing to have a former player who is honest, even if you disagree with them, versus just the fluffy nonsense that's going to get put out there to make everybody happy.
Zoltan, who's on the broadcast for Fox, the legendary
Ibrahimovic, I love him.
Swedish player. He was asked during the broadcast after the United States beat Australia, just one word, can the U.S. win the World Cup? And he just said, yes, they can. So Tim Howard, that's why I'm saying that there's got to be some personal hatred coming from Tim Howard and this team.
What do you think that would be?
Because they weren't as good when he was around.
So you think it's like a jealousy
thing? It is. They didn't invest money. They didn't bring a legendary coach who brought Tottenham to the top of the Premier League. And then he coached at Chelsea. They finally brought him over to the United States. They didn't do that when Tim Howard was the goalie. So, yes, I think there is a severe jealousy coming from Tim Howard. And I think that fans around the United States, including me, who watched him when I was little, I now have sort of a disliking towards him.
So is it just this alone that's changed that opinion a little bit for you?
Absolutely.
This is the heel turn for you.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Because I want to know the breakdown of why they can't win. Not just, no, it's impossible.
Well, I think he kind of said it. Do you want to play that part again? Do we need to play it again?
Because you have to go through Argentina and France. Has he seen the bracket? I mean, he should go look at BBC. They have, if it stands, what the United States' path towards the World Cup final, what it would be. I mean, it's the easiest out of any of the teams.
You sent me this path, so let's look at it here, of course.
Well, I sent you the dates, but I can look up the path.
Okay,
of
all right. All right, so this is just dates. Yeah, potential path. Yeah, Bay Area, Seattle, L.A., okay, Dallas for the semifinal. And then okay, so that's more the path. Okay, I got you. But
I'll pull it up right now.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. So let's look at the path then.
Right now, it would be Ecuador.
Okay.
And then they would play New Zealand or Czechia. And then you'd play probably Australia or Uruguay. And then all of a sudden, you are in the quarterfinals. Actually, that is against the quarterfinals. So in the semifinals, you would be playing probably Germany, Morocco, or the Netherlands. And then if you upset one of those teams, you are now in the finals. Period. So world-class teams, you only have to play two of them because you just won your group.
All right, so compare then, because you're passionate about this, and I'm all for it, but compare then these teams that they might see on that path to Australia and Paraguay then as teams in terms of competition. How much of a difference is there then from what you've seen?
Paraguay is historically one of the best defensive teams in all the World Cup.
Okay, but right now, though. Historically,
it's
great.
They are one of the – they're in the top 10 defenses, and they scored 4 goals against them. I'm telling you, Balogun, he is no joke. He plays for Monaco. He's going to eventually end up on Arsenal. He's going to.
Mm-hmm.
And if Pulisic comes back from his injury and plays the way he has done in the past, who – they're obviously – they're no one's better than Messi. No one's going to be better than Mbappe, but this team does have a chance of winning it all, especially with the path that FIFA has given them.
All right, give me the path again that the U.S. could potentially face.
So right now they're going to play Ecuador.
Okay.
And then they're going to play New Zealand.
Okay.
Or Czechia.
Okay.
Then you play Austria or Uruguay, or Congo or Ghana, but I don't think that's going to happen. And then you'll find yourself in the semifinals against either Germany, Norway, Netherlands, or Morocco. I don't think Norway is going to be there, but they have Haaland, one of the best players in the world.
Yeah.
But so let's say if they play Germany, who looked terrible yesterday, against Ivory Coast, or Morocco, the Netherlands. And Netherlands have looked shaky against Japan.
So it feels like the semifinal is when we're talking about a real obstacle for them.
It is an obstacle. It is a
real obstacle.
Well, of course.
I mean, listen, you're only going to play better teams as you go farther in a tournament. That's a guarantee.
But Norway, Germany, Netherlands, and Morocco, all three. Morocco doesn't have their best player because he's being charged criminally. Netherlands struggled against Japan. Germany almost lost to Ivory Coast. And Norway they're fine. They just have the best player in the world, Haaland, if you're not considering Messi. So this is a challenge, but it's not like you're going up against Argentina in round two.
Mm-hmm. Who do you think the best team in the tournament is right now from what you've seen?
Argentina. I mean, they look so easy for them.
Okay.
And
a lot of that's also
having
Messi.
Champions.
Messi still feels like he's in his prime.
Yes.
So there's that. So you mentioned the Netherlands.
Or England. And by the way, Mexico, Spain right now will have to face each other. So that's eliminating one of those powerhouses.
Okay.
England, Portugal have to play each other right now as it stands in the first round. And then Argentina will probably play one of those teams in the quarterfinals or the semifinals. And so the U.S. will go up against probably England or Argentina, but they will see themselves...
In the semifinal, you're saying?
No, the semifinals would be Germany in the finals. Like, they're really only facing two true powerhouses if the bracket stands as it is right now.
All right. Just from an odds perspective here, give me those early teams they're going to play again. I'm just curious.
Ecuador.
All right, so Ecuador, I don't even know where Ecuador is on here. All right, so Ecuador, I see it. They're 350-1 to win the World Cup. Just gives you a perspective.
They tied Curacao last night.
Okay.
They're not very good. New Zealand, Czechia, they can win that. Uruguay, Austria, they'll probably play the winner of that. And then you face the real challenge between Germany, Norway.
Yeah, I mean, New Zealand is such a long shot to win. It's not even, I mean, we're talking 2,500-1 to win. Right, so it's like we're talking, this just puts in perspective of like just where they're viewed in the overall for anybody that's just like, this is a simple gauge for me for that. You mentioned Czechia.
Czechia, Uruguay, Austria.
Yeah, I mean they're so far down too for the most part.
That's the thing, and that this
Uruguay is 70-1 to win.
They're better. I mean, the U.S. is obviously better than Uruguay.
Right, right. No, look, I don't think they're going to lose their first knockout round game. It's just I think that laying out that path gives you gives you a better look at where they're going to go. I don't disagree with your view on saying it's impossible is wrong. What I disagree with you on is that Tim Howard saying that, if that's how he really feels, I'm okay with that. But it's interesting because so the way you look at this, Wes, is that, you know, he's a little bitter because this team is better and they've gotten more resources than maybe they have in the past. You see that a lot in sports. I mean, we see it a lot with old heads in the NBA looking at today's NBA, and they're pissed off at the way the game's played or how much guys are getting paid now or too much three-point shooting or whatever the case is. There is a level of jealousy and competition, I think, with different eras, players from different eras, especially once the game is continuing on and you're no longer a part of the game. I can understand that feeling that Tim Howard might have if that's the case, and I don't think you're really reading into it too much. It feels relatively fair that that's the case, but it's ironic, though, because Landon Donovan doesn't pull any punches either. Like
He does not,
and I feel like he was... put it this way. Landon Donovan basically saying they got to play perfect soccer all the way through and
which
you got to have some bad games. That's reasonable to me. But I think they both were honest in what their assessment is of where this team is and what their path is, even if you disagree with one of them like Tim Howard.
I just think it's a little tone deaf because this came out last night. He said this yesterday. Mm-hmm. And the last 48 hours, they have all the talk has been look at the path for the United States. So saying that it's impossible is just not true. In fact, even saying that they have to play perfect in the knockout stage is also wrong because they didn't play perfect against Paraguay. Mm-hmm. And now they're facing an easier matchup between Ecuador if it stands right now. And if they face Congo or Austria, these teams are not as good as some of their teams in their group. So they don't have to play perfect soccer. When they do have to play perfect soccer, obviously it would be the Netherlands or Morocco. Of course. No one's saying that. But that's in the semifinals. That's in July.
We got a long way for that.
Yes, we do. So all right. Whatever happens between here and whenever the semifinals is, I sent you the day. I don't remember what it was. Does not have to be perfect for the United States. It's July 14th is the semifinals. It doesn't have to be perfect, and haven't been perfect.
Can I get you to bet the U.S.? Can I get you to bet the U.S. to win the World Cup?
No, because I think it's going to end up being England.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good one. They're 6-1 right now.
I think
France is the favorite. Then it's Spain. Then it's England. Then Argentina, Portugal, Brazil, with Germany, then the Netherlands. So,
I don't like personal hatred because what has happened in the past, they didn't. The women's are the reason why, really, the U.S. and soccer has grown. They won back-to-back World Cups.
Yes.
And the U.S. men's are now trying.
Yes. Oh, yeah. No, don't get me wrong. There's a difference between where the U.S. men's national team is and where the women's team is. So, I mean, dude, the women's national team is a powerhouse. The men have not been.
Yep. So, right. I just... When it comes from a former player who... And it didn't go well for him, I take it with a grain of salt.
Well... I guess we'll see, won't we? You're not going to buy a Tim Howard jersey anytime soon, I guess?
No, never.
All right. Nick Ashew on The Fan and the Team. You know, one of the good things to hear coming out of minicamp, even though we're not going to get a ton of information, is that Jaden Daniels apparently looks like Jaden Daniels again. John Keim kind of did like his... biggest observations from what he was able to see at minicamp. Because you don't get a ton of access there necessarily, but says he's healthy and more accurate than last spring. And I think the big thing here, too, is you're going to have Terry McLaurin and Jaden Daniels working together again. They had a great connection his rookie year, but they missed out on a lot of that. That holdout was a difference maker for this team, and it was not a good one. That was one of the big reasons for last year's disconnect, and they've kind of mentioned that and talked about it, too. But, you know, I'm really fascinated by how this GoPro helmet is going to help Jaden Daniels learn the offense, because their whole goal is to see what he's seeing. Then understand what he's calling out, what the reaction was, why. Like, that's smart. I'm all for using technology to make your team better and get an advantage. And it's not like a GoPro is a new technology, but this is a real opportunity for them to sit and watch the film and then get his perspective. Like, it's a damn video game. So it's like, okay, so you called this out. You saw it. Here's what you're missing over here. I think it's absolutely brilliant. Dan Quinn talked about it too, and he said, like, the fact that he can call out who should be where, that's a big deal. Basically saying that already understanding a lot of those things, he's got an understanding for the game. And look, Jaden Daniels has a high football IQ. Nobody's going to doubt that. It's just a matter of getting that consistency and getting that understanding of where the offense is, what he needs to do, where everybody else needs to be. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts. And David Blau was obviously in the organization last year, so I'm sure they're going to work on making sure there's a tie-in and, you know, some crossover in terms of certain things that Jaden Daniels was comfortable with. But, you know, they have a rapport. They've already worked together. So a lot of those things do help. It's just the most important thing is getting consistency for Jaden Daniels, because we all know, we've seen it. Remember Jason Campbell always having a different offense every year? I mean, it was constant. Now, I'm not saying Jason Campbell was going to turn into a Pro Bowl quarterback, but I certainly wasn't put in a position to get any better when he's constantly having to learn a new offense every season. It's just so important to have that level of consistency, even if it's similar. At some point, there's going to be turnover, right? At some point, if the Commanders' offense has a lot of success, David Blau is going to get head coaching jobs or offers. It's going to happen. It's a guarantee. When it is, we don't know. I mean, it could be 5 years from now, and he's still in his mid-30s. And he's still a young head coach and plenty of time to develop. Like, hopefully he's not thinking that far down the road too much, and it's a lot more about being a great offensive coordinator, because, you know, you got to show that first. But if it does get to be that case, you still have years, and you can also plan ahead, or like, okay, who's going to be the successor if that's the case? Who's going to be the guy that takes over when David Blau eventually leaves? Now, they're not probably thinking that too much yet, because, you know, you got to actually win now and have success now before you take that next step. But that is something that you're going to have to think about if success becomes, hopefully, part of what this offense does. Like, being successful would be a big deal. And, you know, you're going to have that level of continuity for Jaden Daniels so he can succeed. Even once he gets, you know, if he has success, they get the big extension and all that goes, then it still needs to continue moving forward because, you know, you're paying a lot of money to a quarterback, and it matters. And look, wide receiver certainly has his questions, but let's make no mistake about it. You still have a lot of questions about running back. Like, who's going to kind of take over, what that running back room is going to look like? Is Bill going to get those opportunities as more of a, not a feature back or a lead back? They're going to be doing a little bit of running back by committee, but, you know, what does it look like? When is he going to be out there? Are you going to have a third down back? I mean, short yardage situations, probably Catron Allen. I mean, that's why they drafted him in the sixth round. He's a big power back, which is something this team desperately needed. I mean, the rest of that room with, like, White and Ford back there, I mean, maybe who makes the roster, who doesn't? They're not going to keep probably four running backs. So maybe Jerome Ford could end up being the odd man out, kind of similar to Ja'Cory Krosky Merritt a little bit in terms of his ability to catch the ball out of the backfield, like all those things. Commanders haven't had a 1,000-yard rusher since 2021 and only 2-11 seasons. So it's, the run game has not been kind to them. And I know the NFL is different, and people, you got to throw the football, and they got to run the ball too. You have to run the football to set up the pass, and that's going to be something that they really need to establish. There's all this talk about Ja'Cory Krosky Merritt and how great he could be. We saw flashes, like the Chargers game last year was an example. I don't know why Chris Rodriguez didn't get more opportunities. He's not there anymore. Clearly, they were just determined to not give him real opportunities, but now he's in Jacksonville, so who cares? Liam Cohen's going to probably get the most out of him. They were really excited to sign him there. They go back to Kentucky days, so it's, you know, there's tie-ins there. But if you're the Commanders, you got to get some consistency out of your run game too. And look, most teams do a level of running back by committee, but you got to have somebody that you can count on as your number one back. Whatever that looks like, you've got to kind of at least figure out generally what that rotation's going to look like. And again, you could also still have somebody coming in training camp. Maybe somebody gets cut. It's a numbers game, and another team wants to go younger, and you get a running back that's like 27, 28 even, that's on the market. You go, that's a perfect fit for us. So, like, the way the roster sits is not totally shaped. We know there's still a chance that wide receiver is going to be addressed, whether it's Stephon Diggs or Brandon Ayuk. D-Hop has even been thrown around. I mean, I'd probably go Stephon Diggs out of all of them, but this is going to be still a roster that's kind of in progress. And look, Antonio Williams, if he can establish himself as a number two, we'll put it in quotes because the offense is going to use him in different ways too, but if he's their second leading receiver, that's good. That's good for the future, but you still need now. Oh, and by the way, we know they're still going to be addressing receiver moving forward because Terry McLaurin, I mean, how much longer is he going to be here? I know he signed an extension, but we know how that guaranteed money drops off. And look, he's getting older. I mean, it could be three more years, maybe. But what if it's not? Like, what if he starts to... I mean, there's a chance. I'm not hoping for it. I don't want it. But you have to think about these things if you're this organization. But again, some of those are steps farther down the road. But you need more consistency from some of the younger guys on this roster that you've either drafted or that you sign in free agency so you can say as a front office and a coaching staff, okay, we've started to now establish a little more of a foundation. And that's going to be really important for them. But it's good to hear that Jaden Daniels looks like Jaden Daniels again. Because as the quarterback goes, the rest of the team does. That's the NFL. Nick Ashew on The Fan and the Team. Nick Ashew on The Fan and the Team. Wasn't this song in one of the Cars movies, Wes?
Yes, it was.
It was.
Joe Crow.
You know, I have a confession. I love those kind of movies. I do. Cars, all those animated. You know what? Sometimes you just want a nice rainy day when there's no sports. Maybe you just want to relax and go back to your childhood. Love the Cars movies.
Although that might have been Real Gone, but it's still by Joe Crow.
Oh, you're right. It was. No, wait. It was. No, you're right. It was. Damn it. You're right, I'm wrong.
Well, it was a great song, though.
It was still a great song. Yeah, you're right. It was that song, though. Whatever. It's the voice that I recognize in Sheryl Crow. It was not the actual song. Close enough.
I got to see her live.
Did you? When
yeah,
was this?
Yeah, great. Great performance. What's up?
When was this?
It was about 8 months ago.
Okay.
She was performing with Willie and Bob Dylan.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. There you go. Well, we got that wrong. So I guess we just realized we sounded like idiots thinking that was in Cars. But hey, it's fine. It's, you know, sometimes it happens. you know, look, we looked a lot at the Commanders' offense here at this point with minicamp done. But defense is where it's weird because, like, it's two different types of pressure, right? There's pressure and expectations because of the quarterback situation and who the Commanders have at quarterback and his upside and Jaden Daniels and staying healthy and all that. The defense is like the pressure's on just not suck. Really, like, the expectations are lower, but the pressure, I would argue, is actually higher because you haven't seen this defense succeed in a long time. You're obviously adding a rookie coordinator on that side as well in Durante Jones, but, I mean, you know, they're switching to a 3-4. You add Sonny Styles, who we know is a freak athlete and should be the quarterback of this defense. Adafe Owe adds a lot of speed, too. He's a fast guy off the edge. Leo Chenal, I know he changed the pronunciation of his last name. It's still hard to get used to, but, Frankie Louvu, even. Like, you need more out of Frankie Louvu. Dorrance Armstrong healthy. I just don't think that this defense is going to be something that we look at and go, ugh, this year. I really don't. But they've got to, again, you always have the caveat of they got to stay healthy. Always first and foremost. But even beyond that, they really did make, I know some people maybe think that Adafe Owe got paid too much. I mean, maybe. But in the grand scheme of things, $68 million guaranteed for a good edge rusher is really not that much. He can exceed that contract. Leo Chenal can exceed that contract. Nick Cross can exceed his contract. Those are some of the young guys there, not to mention you add Sonny Styles. You've gotten faster. You've gotten younger on this defense. That was the number one thing that they needed to do defensively was just getting younger, more athletic, faster. That combination of player was so massively important for them. Because they were old. They were an old team last year. One of my biggest concerns heading into last season was, can this defense pick up the slack for an offense that hasn't worked a lot together? And because at that point, remember, you had Terry McLaurin dealing with the contract. You had offensive line issues and injuries. And Deebo Samuel was new. And it just felt like they were going to struggle even if everybody was healthy at the start of the season. And the defense was going to have to be, with a lot of veterans, the group that picked up the slack. And it didn't happen. And that's one of the reasons why they only won five games. It's a combination of things, but that was part of the reason. So just a capable defense with some of the guys they've added is so massively important for them. Because as much as we can talk about how the NFL is a quarterback-driven league and a pass-happy league and it's all about scoring and offense, I mean, it is. But go look at the Super Bowl. Look at the two teams that made the Super Bowl. That was because of their defenses. The Patriots got to the Super Bowl in spite of Drake May. Great regular season, terrible postseason. Even the Seahawks. I mean, the Seahawks got an up-and-down year from Sam Darnold. Even an up-and-down playoffs. He was great in the NFC Championship game against the Rams, but that defense is the reason why they won the Super Bowl. They didn't make the defense the Super Bowl MVP. It was Kenneth Walker. And yes, they were able to run the ball, and that helped, which is something that, like we talked about last time, clearly still up in the air for the Commanders. I think running back is still really murky for them. But defensively, you've got to at least have a capable defense to start. Now, it's not like the roster they've built this year is a roster you're going to look at and go, yeah, that's going to be the thing for a while. No, they're going to add more pieces. You're going to have to find more talent in the draft. You're going to decide who's going to get longer, bigger term, you know, deals moving forward and who's not going to be a part of this team. But the hope is that some of the younger guys you've signed and drafted that are a part of this defense are a part of it for a while. And then you add the other pieces and the other needs. Maybe you're addressing more in the secondary. You're adding more another edge rusher, because you can never have enough edge rushers. You can always have more. So whatever they've built this year, this is about the foundation, and it's about taking a big step. Now, I'm not saying this is like, well, they've added new guys. If you're 27th, 28th in total defense, that's fine. No, 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 that is unacceptable. You can't be that way this year. But there is an understanding that this isn't the final form of the defense. If you can take strides forward, if you can get better, if you can look like a defense that's actually capable of tackling people and getting some stops to start, then you can build on that moving forward. It's having to gut the entire thing like they just did. You can't do that again, right? This is a multi-stage process. And look, the Commanders' rebuild was set back because they won 12 games in 2024, and nobody would take that back, myself included. But Jaden Daniels having the season he had, the 12 wins, getting to an NFC Championship game, all that's great. But we all know this team looked around at this roster and said, maybe this is actually better than we thought. And it wasn't even the same roster in 2025 from 2024, but they were still operating in those. It was two GPSs giving them two different directions at the same time, right? One of them had them going down the rebuild road. The other one had them going down the contend road. And you can't drive on both roads at the same time. You got to pick one. And they learned the hard way last year. So the rebuild really started now after what was essentially first two seasons of a lot of guys that were on 1 or 2 year deals. Now, granted, they didn't give out tons of massive deals this offseason, but they've gotten guys now where it's more about younger. Can you exceed this contract? We'll give you a bigger one next. Nick Cross is one, you know. I mean, that's okay because they're at least younger. It's not one-year prove-it deals for 35-year-old veterans. Now, you want some of them on your roster, but you don't want to get to the point where that's how your entire roster is built up, because then you've got the turnover and then you don't have any longevity and all this stuff. It's a lot. But it does feel like there's certainly, and apparently a lot of people that have obviously been there, I've not been there to minicamp, and there's only so much the people that are on the beat or whatever can see, but they do say that there is definitely a better energy there, and just the talent alone and the expectations, all of those, a lot different, which is definitely good for this team. So, just a middle-of-the-pack defense. We're begging. The target for me, 15th in total defense. Respectable against the running pass. Just respectable. It would go a long way with this team. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Yeah, this song makes way more sense for Cars, the movie. I was completely wrong. I recognize the voice in Sheryl Crow. Doesn't that happen a lot, Wes? Right? Course. You hear a song and you think it's different, it's similar. You hear it, just it gets you. Anyway, great song, right?
This is going to be a World Cup song. She says, "I'm American made."
You know what? It's not bad. They should have gotten Sheryl Crow involved too.
Shakira, Sheryl Crow mix?
Can't go wrong. I don't think anybody will complain, that's for sure. You know, whatever's going to give you that positive vibe moving forward, right? just get everybody. I mean, come on. It's kind of a banger. Yeah, I might add this to Spotify. Kind of forgot about this song. Going to be honest with you. Might get added to the mix a little bit. Maybe it'll be the Jets theme song of the season.
Real Gone?
Yeah, Real Gone. No, I saw this, though. This is they have a positive jealousy over the Knicks right now. This is my favorite. I love this. So, my neighbor next door, if anybody's seen him on Game Day Garage at all, Tony the Jets fan is who I'm talking about. Yes, him. With the psycho parlays every single week. He's a crazy person. He's what you'd expect from a Jets fan that's really optimistic. And he, before I even saw this from Geno Smith and Breece Hall, they were at minicamp this week, and of course they're getting asked about the Knicks. It was before and, you know, during the parade and everything. And, you know, Geno Smith like gives us a little bit of added motivation. Watching those guys win a championship has to do something for you as a competitor. Right answer, you're going to get asked this. It's the way to go. Breece Hall was at that final game in San Antonio, and, you know, he's talked about it too, the same thing. Like, it motivates us. That's great. My psychopath neighbor bet $100 on the Jets to win the Super Bowl after the Knicks just got to the finals. So people are getting Knicks fever across the board even after it's all said and done. And, you know, I don't know what it is about the Jets, the Mets, and the Nets in New York, but it's tough, man. Those are the secondary teams, and it's the same sounding names. I don't know if you need to change all three of the names, but it's tough. I mean, it's been a long,
That's
long
a great
time.
Point with the names.
I'm telling you, think about it, Wes. The Jets, the Mets, and the Nets. Why?
Wow.
Why are they all bad and
the
have
the
same,
that
same
spend.
Sounding name?
Who's the? I think out of all of them, I think the Mets are the worst with the amount of money they spend.
It's true. The
second
Mets continue
payroll
to
roll in baseball and your ass.
And this is the second round of this approach with the same owner too. So think about that. It's not like they have. This is their first time trying it. It's again, let's go spend money, and again, the team continues to just be abysmal. I don't know what it is, but those names mean something, Wes. We're going to have to investigate. I got a tinfoil hat next to me. I haven't put it on yet, but I feel
I
like there's
it.
A conspiracy theory we need to figure out. I don't know what it is yet. 57 years and counting since the Jets have won a championship. 1969. Oh, Joe Namath. Those were the days for them, weren't they? Like, that's
why
I feel bad.
It's been a while for the Yankees, too.
I mean, it's been a while, but come on, it's nowhere close.
I mean, 2009.
Yeah, it has been a while, yes. It's not easy to win a championship, but what's easier, to be a Mets fan or a Yankees fan?
Well, of course, the Yankees, they just went to the World Series.
Right. So you
and
have that.
The Mets.
And they were in NFC, you know, in ALCS not that long ago.
Well,
Mets
were, they were in the World Series in 2015.
Okay, that's 11 years ago, dude.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of forget that they were even there.
Yeah, lost to the Royals.
Yeah, so that was a forgettable World Series, I feel like.
I liked it because it was finally a low-payroll team who built their organization,
yeah,
the roster from the ground up, from the foundation, from the farm, you know, the farm mm-hmm. system, and won it all.
They were all bullpen. They were bullpen and base. I remember that Royals team. They were bullpen and base running. Like, that was their bread and butter.
Aziz Escobar.
Yes. They were so good on
the
base path.
And
yeah, they were so good on the base path. They had a really good bullpen, and that's what really propelled them to that win. And you're right. It's the smaller – some of these teams, man, it's like you see where the A's always are or the Rays. Oh, another rhyming name. Wes, we're on to something here, man. I can't figure out what it is yet, but we're on to something.
The Rays and the A's?
The Rays and the A's. They both win with – you know, they maximize their payroll. They do it the opposite of the Mets.
They just can't get to the mountaintop.
They can't get to the mountaintop, but they're really limited. They're always building a team with one hand tied behind their back, and yet they still find ways to at least maximize with the resources they're given.
Now, the Rays have been – I've actually got to see the Rays in the World Series during COVID. Now, the A's, I don't know. They've been on a little downhill spiral.
No, I mean they have, but like the A's have had these moments. Like the A's have that they end up building like these scrappy teams at times where it's, oh, they're not going to win much, but look at them. They're winning more than we expected. Kind of like the Nats are right now where it's like, oh, this Nats team's doing a little more than we expected. Like that's where the A's go when they don't spend any money whatsoever. It's Moneyball. I mean, it's the whole Moneyball thing, you know? So it's that idea.
Great movie.
Yeah, great. It is a great movie. Which one do you like better, Moneyball or Draft Day?
I'm going to go Moneyball. I'm a baseball guy.
Yeah, see, I figured that'd be the case. Draft Day for me. I know Draft Day is like a little bit over the top in terms of that the trades that happen right before, but it's a good movie. I love that behind the scenes stuff there too. Oh, yeah. But yeah, Moneyball is really good. I've seen both of them multiple times. They're great. It's, you know, I figure you go baseball though. But yeah, A's, Rays, Mets, Jets, Nets. There's something with the way a name sounds in sports is going to dictate whether you're good or bad. I don't know if there's a study out there, but we got to figure that out and see what it looks like.
Just being a part of New York City.
I mean, it could be. But think about all of those teams. The Jets are always the secondary team to the Giants in terms of, you know, there's always like a tier one and tier two team when you have dual, like Clippers, Lakers, same
Who's
thing.
Who's a Nets fan out there?
Nobody.
Nets fans, please call in.
They don't exist, dude. They don't. And they try to make them the cool team. They move to Brooklyn and Jay-Z's involved. You have the Russian billionaire owner and it's just going on. They got nothing. Their draft last year, it's like, let's go draft a bunch of dudes in the first round that are developmental players and maybe a couple work out, but they got no star power whatsoever. And that's what I'm saying. Be careful because they could go throwing a bunch of money at Trae Young and the Wizards are like, well, now we lose him for nothing. That sucks.
True.
Like, there's a possibility that that happens because, I mean, who are you going to watch with the Nets right now? Michael Porter Jr.? He could probably get traded. So there's not even, they got nothing, man.
Peak Nets.
I mean, it is.
Was D'Lo, Garrett Allen, Spencer Dinwiddie, when they weren't supposed to be good. And
The Kenny Atkinson team.
They went on a run.
Kenny Atkinson should have been the coach of that team, and then they brought Kyrie in, and it was like, this isn't going to work. And Kyrie was like, well, we're all coaches. With Steve Nash, I will never. That's when you knew. When Kyrie Irving was like, we're kind of all coaches on this team. Oh, God. You're screwed.
Well, that's the end of that.
I mean, that was, yeah, you knew right away. There's a reason why Steve Nash hasn't coached since. I don't even know if Steve Nash would have ever been a good coach, but he was definitely not going to be a good coach there. That was a bad situation from the beginning. That was a good team, though. It was a team that overachieved, like those A's and Rays. There you go. Nick Ashew on the Fan.